I'm Manoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I wish I could say that was Leonard's new theme music. It's not. It is the 1958 instrumental song Rumble by Native American rock guitarist and singer-songwriter Link Wray. He is one of the people who really helped create the genre of rock and roll, and he is featured in a new documentary called Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World. This documentary explores how Native Americans changed and shaped our music, and they were an integral part of our music history, despite attempts to ban, censor, and erase Indian culture in the United States. From father of the Delta Blues, Charlie Patton, to psychedelic guitar wizard Jimi Hendrix, many of the music greats came from Native American backgrounds, but they hid this part of their heritage because in the documentary we learn there's an old Native American saying, be proud you're Indian, but be careful who you tell. Well, joining me in the studio to discuss their film is the documentary's director, Catherine Bainbridge, and executive producer and legendary guitarist, Stevie Salas. Welcome to you both.
Hey, thank you so much.
Who wrote that? That was fantastic.
I added a few flourishes for you.
I like
you
the legendary.
There,
that's the part I'm talking
about.
Well,
I saw the movie and I was like, oh, I didn't know it was that guy. It's so cool. So, Catherine, let's start with you. You kick off the film talking about Link Wray. I have to admit, did not know much about Link Wray, in part that he was Shawnee. Like, I'd heard some of the music. Tell us about him.
I didn't know he was Native American, and I didn't know the influence that he had on rock at all. And we've been making, my husband and I have been making indigenous films for 20 years. We didn't know.
Huh.
So what people are about to discover when they come see the movie is something we didn't know either, and we discovered. And one of the big questions we had was why? Why don't we know? And that's really what the movie explores.
And is this how you two hooked up then at that point?
Yeah, I brought the story to Resolution Pictures to make, because they'd made a film called Real Injun that was about the stereotype portrayal of the Native Americans in film. And it was really, really good. And I thought, I had just finished with Tim Johnson and I at the Smithsonian, created an exhibit about this subject from a book that I'd been studying this stuff for a long time, being a Native American guitar player. And I'd found that Link Wray, once I realized he was a Native American, he was pretty much one of the forefathers, like the Mount Rushmore of rock, according to Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck and the Pete Townsend and all the greatest guitar players that guys like me and Slash and all of us grew up listening to and learning from. We realized that guy influenced all of them in such a huge way. And we'd all say to ourselves, why do the most famous people in the world know him and know these other guys, but yet normal people don't have a clue? And that's when it was sort of like we set out to light up the world to Link Wray and his and what he did. He's like the spark of rock and roll, really.
But you start with Link Wray, but then you go on to many other names. Do you want to just list some? No idea that they had Native American
heritage. Catherine was smart that way because she starts with Link Wray because she wants to say, like, this isn't going to be like your typical Native American documentary. Dum, 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 and we came from the sores of, you know, she's like, boom, Link Wray's rock and roll. We made a rock and roll film that's about Native Americans, not necessarily a Native American film that's about rock and roll. We wanted it to be an entertaining rock and roll film for everybody. And you were smart, Catherine, to start with Link Wray.
Yeah, we started with rock and roll because we wanted people to know this is going to be fun and interesting and you are going to learn things you never knew. But then Link Wray's like this amazing, huge guy. But then we go back and we start looking at Charlie Patton, father of the Delta Blues, who is confirmed a quarter Choctaw and possibly half, up to half, Native American. Why do we not know that? And we learn all about the early blues history where blacks and Native people came together because Native people couldn't claim Native. Because if you claim Native in those days, you could be shot.
Or shipped away.
Because it meant you still had a claim to the land.
And you sort of explain why there was this, proliferation of young American Indian children, half black, half American Indian, because when there's genocide and you get rid of all the men, but you bring over from Africa only men, there was bound to be...
There were some good times going on out there in the bush.
Had to be.
Yeah, like the people don't know this, but the first slaves in America were Native Americans. But it's hard to enslave people on their own land, right? Because those guys knew how to come back and fight. You know what I mean? The Native guys knew how to fight. It was their territory.
They still know how to fight.
Yeah, that's right. So that kind of stuff is in the film where you find out, oh my God, all the guys coming over from Africa, the slaves coming over from Africa in the early days were all men. And who did they have children with?
Yeah.
You know, the Native women that were still, you know, slaves on the plantations. You know, that's what happened. That's the early history. It's like, it's so interesting that we don't know any of that history.
It was sort of erased, right? Because like Monk Brudeau was telling me one time we were talking and he said, we were trying to figure out really what the hell the Mardi Gras Indians were. Because I used to, you know, hang out with the Neville brothers and we talk about the Mardi Gras Indians. But then I'd ask Ivan Neville, what are they on? He goes, I really don't know. So then Monk Brudeau said, that's because we're Native American blood mass, you know, living as black people, and on that one day we could dress like who we were secretly among ourselves, and everyone else thought it was like Halloween, but to them it was the day they were celebrating their native heritage, and that's where the Mardi Gras Indians came from. And when Monk Brudeau said that, it was like he got all quiet and he was like, it's like he was afraid to say it. It was really, really weird. I had to ask him, excuse me, what was that? He got really like, he was afraid. It was like, that's the only time we could dress like Indians. It was like really. He was still like traumatized by it. It was crazy.
Could we delve into like why he felt so traumatized about that and why nobody talked about it?
Well, that's Catherine. She's the historian, and she's ready to kill all.
I know. I'm not a historian, but this film taught me so much because we interviewed the most amazing historians in this film. It's a film that's super full of like smart historian people and then awesome rock stars. It's like really fun. People will love it. But I'll tell you this. Why people... Perfey, who's a woman singer, a Tuscarora woman singer in the film, told me when she was young, she grew up in North Carolina, you know? And she grew up when the KKK was still a thing there in North Carolina. There was a big sign that said, North Carolina, proud home of the KKK. That sign was up till the early 70s.
Gosh.
That's where Link Ray grew up. He grew up with that. He used to hide under his bed when the KKK would come along on the horses, because they would put crosses on Indian homes in front of their homes, much as they would in front of black homes. If you were a person of color, you were targeted, and that was that.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi. I'm sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I am talking to the director of Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World. This is a new documentary, Catherine Bainbridge, and the executive producer, Stevie Salas. So you show, actually, that terrifying billboard that was in North Carolina. So living under these circumstances, it just... So why talk about your heritage? Because it could get you killed.
Let me tell you something. Because my parents came from the New Mexico area, right? So in the early 1900s, you did not want to be an Indian. Because they were just... You know, they were chasing Apache right up into the 1900s, you know, across the Mexican border and back. And if you were pursuing them and killing them, it was okay. And so the last thing you wanted to be was a Native American. You wanted to, I'm from Spain, I'm Hispanic. If you were Mexican, you could stay and farm. And if you were a Native American, you're going to get shipped away and your family's going to get split up. So everybody just stopped. On my birth certificate, it says my mother and father are white and they're darker than me. It's pretty funny. I put a thing on Facebook. I said, hey, everybody, I found out some great news. I might be white. And I put my birth certificate on Facebook. So it was because...
And how do you identify now, Stevie?
I always knew who I was. My parents always said we were Apache. We knew who we were, but they went through life having to dig. Some of my father, like my father, didn't grow his braid until he was probably 45 years old. Huh. And when he died at 80 years old, you know, he had his braid down the middle of his back. But for the longest time, he was just assimilating into life. And his own sisters sometimes wouldn't know the stories that my father knew. He was the oldest, or the second oldest, I think, or the oldest. And he would know some of these stories of where my grandmother and her parents came from and how they crossed the Rio Grande and how she was stolen by an Apache guy and sold to some Mexicans on a hacienda and stolen back. And all these insane stories of our wonderful country.
I want to tell you one story about Link Ray, too. This is his mom. His mom, Shawnee Indian, she, at 10 years old, like there was, this is in the middle of KKK territory. 10 years old, she was walking to school, and five white girls surrounded her and broke her back. And she wore a brace her entire life. And so that's the, that's the kind of thing, like, that was going on at the time. So that's why people... literally were, when you say, why were they afraid? That's the kind of fear Monk Brudeau was talking about when you kept it quiet.
Yeah.
Don't tell people you're Native.
Or you didn't tell your kids. You just didn't bother to tell your kids who they were. You know, Tabu from the Black Eyed Peas said he never knew who he was till he went to visit his grandma one summer and she sat him down and said, let me tell you who you are. And then he was like, oh my God, no wonder.
He's in the film as well.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the thing that everyone asks after the film, and everyone asks me, I don't know about Catherine, but everyone says, why didn't we know this? And I'm going to tell you why, because we, as people, didn't go through life knowing or telling people that we were Native American. So therefore, no one ever knew. So all of a sudden now, well, we are. And then that's how come no one knew this information.
And there's so many people like Thelonious Monk.
Oh, right.
Oh, Mingus.
Charlie Parker is part, like small part, part Native. Hank Williams Jr., quarter Choctaw, like, you know,
Oscar,
country.
Oscar Pettiford.
Roy Rogers. Loretta Lynn.
Roy Rogers.
The Carter family. Like all these, though, there's an Appalachian white Native mix too. Because when people escaped, they escaped into the hills too.
Oh yeah, most Cherokees, a lot of my Cherokee friends look white.
So let's go back to the music then. So Stevie, for you, how did, we were listening to Rumble, those like big chords that came in. How did that influence you as a musician and a lot of the musicians in the film?
You know, here, I'm going to tell you a story because Slash said something to me one time, and I've known Slash, we both kind of started around the same time, and of course, he became much more famous than me, but he's still awesome, and he's still a dear friend, and we like to play together. And he said to me, one day, I was on tour, and I just decided, I listened to Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, Robert, you know, Pete Townsend, and the Kinks, and all these bands that I learned how to play guitar from, and Eric Clapton. And he goes, I wonder who they learned from. And then he started to dig, and he said the name that kept coming up was Link Wray. And so we realized that most rock guitar players, if you were influenced by Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin and you were influenced by The Who, you were influenced by Link Wray. And that's when you really start opening up. And then it seems so obvious if you listen to Rumble right there, 1958, with that super distorted acid guitar. I mean, people used to tell me that the first feedback distorted guitar was the Beatles' I Feel Fine. And it doesn't sound nothing like Link Wray. I mean, so I think that people now think about it and go, oh my God, 1958 with that sound, it's pretty incredible.
I mean, that must have been the best part about making the movie, was digging out like what music were you going to play?
Oh my God, the songs in the movie are incredible. You know, and one story I love too is like, you know, everyone knows Jimi Hendrix. I mean, he's one of the, you know, the greatest guitar players in the entire world.
The greatest.
He is the greatest. And he's, you know, that Native part that he brings to it, that Native part of his culture and his background that not everybody knows is part of him, but you can really hear it when you know, when you start listening and looking at him, then you go, wow, he was really bringing that as part of the full package that is, you know, Jimi Hendrix.
Well, he said, though, just so you know, he did say in magazines, I remember reading, he say he wrote Little Wing and Castles Made of Sound because he was attempting to create a Native American melody. But what people didn't know was that when he dressed like that and he wore the turquoise and he wore those Native outfits, nobody really realized that for him was something that was a tribute to his grandmother.
Yeah, you tell the story with his sister about how he used to put on his grandmother's jackets and that was his fashion inspiration.
Yeah, so, you know, but, you know, Jackson Brown and people like that would say to us, you know, it was the 60s. Everyone dressed like an Indian because Indians represented freedom and rebellion. And so they were like, people were dressed like so like Brad Whitford from Aerosmith said to me one time, he goes, I love Jesse Ed Davis. He goes, I used to look at him and go, God, he sure dresses cool, but I didn't know he was an actual Indian.
And that story, like, surprisingly gets told over and over and over again. Yeah. In terms of like rhythm and beats and things like that, did you start to hear things in music as you learned that more people were part Native American?
Well, I can only turn to myself. Okay, I started playing guitar with George Clinton and Bootsy Collins, who are the kings of funk. You know, George Clinton, they're all in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's who discovered me. And I was playing with them, but they would only let me play rock. But my rhythm was right for them, right? But then I'd go to play with Rod Stewart or Mick Jagger, and I would play rock with them. But my rhythm was funky for them. So there's a Native American sort of a feel, like Robert Trujillo from Metallica talks about it with Randy Castile and himself, that creates this in-between rhythm that's neither black nor white. And all these guys, Robbie Robertson, if you listen to the band, it's really funky. It's not a funk record, but it's funky. You know, so there's a rhythm there that if you start digging in, you really hear and you feel more.
Do you have a favorite, Catherine? Any like favorite? And I mean, they're all so great, but I have to say the story that Jackson Brown tells of that one riff.
Doctor My Eyes.
I had no idea. Like that Doctor My Eyes. Yeah. There's that guitar solo that you all know, audience. Yeah. You're going to be humming it for the rest of the day. Sorry about that. Was a Native American man who, very famous on the music set, walked in and just laid it down.
Yeah, Jesse
one
Davis.
Take.
One take. One take. Yeah, the story's so funny. Like Jackson Brown goes, you know, he played him a song, and Jesse goes, yeah, I don't hear myself on that. I don't think I can play on that. And he's like closing up his guitar to leave.
The best part about that story, though, if you're a musician, is that he said, I told you, he goes, I walked in and he goes, I don't hear myself in that. And then he just picked up his amp and started to walk out the door.
You got to watch the movie to see how it all plays out. Rumble opens at the Film Forum tomorrow. Catherine Bainbridge will be doing Q&A with Stevie Salas tomorrow and Thursday nights at the 7 o'clock screenings. I've been talking to both of them about their new film.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, but also little Stephen Van Zandt. Stevie Van Zandt's going to do Q&A with us. He wrote me yesterday, and David Frick.
Awesome.